Oh, hello, everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Very excited to introduce my friend Michael Castleman. We get to hear from one of the world's most popular sex experts, the very Michael Castleman. Welcome to this program, Michael.
Hey, Diana. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. There's so much to talk about, and you have you've had many books over the. You're almost 50 years into this business.
Hello.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Good. 50 years medical journalist. You have a twice monthly blog all about sex. That was launched in 2009 on psychologytoday.com. And you have 18 books and two previous sexuality guides. You are well qualified to answer questions. And I would like to tell our listening audience that if you're listening live to this, you might call in to 888-874-4888. If you have a question for Michael Castleman, you can also go to his greatsexguidance.com, his website. And Michael, you've answered how many questions do you think over the years? Must be thousands.
About 12,000.
About 12,000. Well, so if you want to call in and ask Michael a question, you're calling in to an expert. Do you ever get tired of answering sex questions?
No, I don't. And actually, I still sometimes get new ones. I got a new one the other day. It was amazing. Somebody is getting a stem cell transplant and wants to know if he can still use erection medication. So I've never considered that before, so that sent me off on a little spasm of research. And, you know, a lot of questions are similar. I mean, I'm sure in sex therapy you get a lot of people who have more or less the same problem, but everybody's different and everyone has a little bit of a different wrinkle, and that's what keeps it interesting.
It sure does. And you write in your well, I have the manuscript, the advanced reader copy of Great Sex Guidance, the comprehensive guide to lifelong pleasure for men and the women who love them. Oh, my goodness, is it ever comprehensive. But you write, and I so agree, that sex is endlessly fascinating. And it is. So much to always learn.
Yeah, and I, you know, I keep up with all the journals. There's new stuff coming out all the time. It's very intellectually engaging, not to mention physically engaging.
Exactly, and if you're having hot sex, it can be cardio, it can be aerobic, and really good for your health, Michael. The quality of your voice isn't great, so if you're on a cell phone, maybe you could move to a better reception area. I don't know anyway, if you can, that would be great. Otherwise, we'll manage.
This is as good as I can get.
Okay. All right. We'll adjust. you're getting lots of questions, and people can ask these questions for free. And greatsexguidance.com, your other website, which is pretty much identical, I believe, to greatsexguidance.com, is mcastleman.com. And I really like it that there you've got the cure for PE with a little video. Talk a little bit about that, because this is a big problem for lots of men. And I always thought, until I read your book, it was pretty much the younger man's domain. But you said, no, it happens for older men, too. So talk about the cure for PE just a bit, if you would.
Well, when you say men's sex problems, everyone assumes we're talking about erection difficulties. And after age 60, erection difficulties are the most prevalent sex problem that men report. But throughout the lifespan, in every age group, from teenagers to guys in their 90s, ejaculatory control issues are a problem for somewhere between 25 and 30% of men. And so that what that means is that over the lifespan, premature ejaculation is the number one sex problem that drives men nuts. And premature ejaculation, ironically enough, was how I became a sex expert. I had it myself in my early 20s, and it really was bedeviling, and I had no idea how to deal with it. But luckily for me, right at that time, in the early 70s, Masters and Johnson, the pioneering sex researchers, developed a cure for premature ejaculation and wrote about it in their second book, Human Sexual Inadequacy, which I read, and I thought it was a revelation. And I thought, oh, God, I'm going to try this. And so I recruited my then-girlfriend, now wife, to help me with the program, and in 1 month I was completely cured, had solid bomb-proof control, and I said to myself, I can't be the only guy. And so I started writing about it, and I've written about sex ever since. So that's, you know, that was almost 50 years ago. And it is the number one problem that men have. And in about 90% of cases, it's very easy to cure. A little information, a little practice, solo or with a partner, and men can learn ejaculatory control without drugs, without anesthetic creams, without any expense, besides the expense of the information itself, which is cheap. I get more questions about premature ejaculation than any other subject, you know, every time I get one, I think, oh, this is sad. Another guy doesn't know the simple secret of ejaculatory control. But I also feel optimistic that, well, here's a guy who's going to learn control. So, you know, one by one, I hope that the men of the world can learn ejaculatory control. They can learn it. It's just a question of, focusing on it and understanding that the problem is not intractable, even if you've had it for years. It can be cured.
Yes, and men have to be patient because they've got to do the exercises. Most need to do them for 2 to 3 months, don't you think, before they're, or am I exaggerating?
Certainly men and couples should allow 1 to 3 months, and if the guy still can't learn ejaculatory control after several months, then I would suggest consulting a sex therapist for individualized coaching and therapy, because, you know, different individuals have different issues. There may be medical issues involved, there may be health problems, there may be trauma history, all kinds of wrinkles can intrude, but for the average guy and couple, 1 to 3 months should do it.
Yes, and you have on your website a little book or a video, I guess it's a video book that people can get, and there are lots of good solutions in that. The Cure for PE, it's called, premature ejaculation.
The video on my website on greatsexguidance.com, there's a promotional video that promotes my little e-booklet, The Cure for Premature Ejaculation, that outlines the sex therapy program that has been developed over the last 60 years that does teach men bomb-proof ejaculatory control or your money back.
I noticed you put that up there. I bet you don't get very many, if any, men requesting their money back.
Maybe 1 in 300, something like that. I mean, some people, can't learn it, and some people just, you know, want their money back. But, you know, almost never. Most people who focus on, who learn the information, who digest the information and apply it in the bedroom can learn solid ejaculatory control.
Mm-hmm. And so those of you guys listening out there, go to greatsexguidance.com. You know, some men just suffer with this, and they think that viewing pornography might help them, but it does exactly the opposite. So talk about that. You have some very good messages. Not be negative about porn, but go on, Michael. What do you have to say about that?
Well,
it's not a good teacher. I know you say that.
Well, the thing about porn is that porn is men's sexual fantasies, and sexual fantasies are fine. You can fantasize about anything, but unfortunately, a lot of men think that porn is some kind of documentary, a how-to make love. Mm-hmm. It is not. It's a cartoon version of sex, and you know, porn's fine. It's one of the great. It's one of the most popular destinations for men on the internet. And it's, you know, it's entertainment, and it's fine, and it's a masturbation aid, because most men self-sex more than most women, and to do that enjoyably, you need fantasies, and a lot of men do it so frequently that they run out of fantasies, but there's porn to step in and give you a billion new fantasies for free. The thing is that a lot of men believe that watching porn causes premature ejaculation. That is not true. Porn does not cause premature ejaculation. What happens, though, is that a lot of men watch porn and feel badly about doing it or conflicted, and so they masturbate very quickly to orgasm and then turn off the porn. Well, what happens in that case is that a lot of those men wind up training themselves to come quickly. But if you look at the sex therapy program that teaches ejaculatory control, it's based on masturbation exercise, that you masturbate and train yourself to last longer. So porn can be involved in ejaculatory control problems, but it's not a causal factor. It's just an artifact of the fact that men use it as a masturbation aid and wind up training themselves to come quickly. They can also use porn to last longer, and many men do.
You have a part in your book, or the manuscript, the pre-book, Great Sex Guidance, where you say, you know, women ease up a little bit on men stroking themselves to porn. I thought that was very sensible advice, because a lot of women just freak out about it.
Yes, the best research to date shows that about 25% of women consider porn an abomination and think that only evil men watch it, and when they learn that their guy watches it, they think, oh, he's evil, he's a pervert, he's a horrible. No, he's not. He's just a regular, ordinary guy. Every man alive has seen porn, and that includes your grandfathers, your father, your uncles, your boyfriends, your husbands, your sons and your grandsons. They all have seen porn. Canadian researchers some years ago tried to do a study that would compare attitudes about sex among men who hadn't seen porn. They couldn't find a single guy who hadn't seen it.
Oh, that's fascinating. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and so while one quarter of women think porn is poison, three quarters of women, are not so down on it, don't think it's an abomination. They may not like it, but, they can live with it. And the fact is that porn is blamed for all kinds of horrible things. There are people believe that porn causes sexual violence, causes sexual assault. That's absolutely not true. In fact, if you look at the actual research, you find that as porn has become legal and more available around the world, the rates of sexual violence have declined. Guys,
yes, I'm aware of that. Mm-hmm.
Guys who are sitting at home stroking the porn are not out raping women.
Mm-hmm.
So the porn bashers, blame. Oh, the other thing is they say it's a big factor in divorce, that it destroys relationships and marriages. Well, yes, it's possible that a disagreement about porn could become a real sticking point in a marriage. But the fact is, over the last 40 years, as porn has become ubiquitous on the Internet, the rate of divorce has declined in the United States. In fact, it's down by about a third. So, you know, where is the evidence that porn is so socially harmful? There is none. When you look at the accusations against porn, they all fall apart when you actually look at the data. So my attitude about it is, you know, every man on earth is going to use porn recreationally. And the issue is, are you in control of it or is it in control of you? And most men are in very good control of their porn habits, just as a lot of women, as most women, are in good control of, you know, going shopping or doing anything women do for self-soothing and recreation.
And couples, a lot of women get really upset if pornography is viewed by their significant other in secret. And so, I found this true in my practice too. So if couples can watch porn together and say, oh, well, maybe we'd like to try that. That works a little bit better with sex education videos, some of which I've narrated over many years for the Sinclair Institute. But just, you know, if we watch it together, and does that turn you on? Oh, well, maybe we could try that. And then it becomes not a secretive thing, but something that might enhance their sexual relationship.
Right.
Knowing
and
that it is, porn is not particularly educational, but it can be entertaining and fantasy boosting.
Yeah, and for women who really dislike standard porn, I suggest you go to the Internet and search feminist porn. Search that.
Right.
And there are all kinds of, there are a lot of women who are producing explicit sexual videos that are have more of a female sensibility. The other site that I like is called Make Love Not Porn, that really is videos of real people making real love in non-porn ways, and it's delightful. So for couples who want to view explicitly erotic material together, there's a whole lot of choices beyond standard porn, and I suggest you check them out.
I noticed that you, on your website, under Mike's Picks, you promoted femme films, and you may or may not remember that I was really good friends with Candida Royale, Candace, for about 20 years, and she died of ovarian cancer, as you know. About 3 years ago, I went to Vancouver, B.C. with my husband to see the American premiere of the film, the documentary film about her life. And it made me very sad to see her at the end with her cancer. But she was a remarkable woman, a real pioneer in, as you know, in explicit films for couples to watch. And, I mean, in 1984, she had the idea, just as technology was allowing videos to come into people's homes, that couples might want to watch female-centric videos where females are paid good attention to. And, you know, some women would watch porn and say, well, why is this couple fucking? You know, why? Well, in female-centric films, they say, well, because they like each other. They're in a relationship. So it isn't just quite so black and white.
Yeah. Well, I have tremendous respect. I loved Candace. I loved Candida Royale, and I thought she was a pioneer. And she had a tremendous problem early on because she would make her films and take them to commercial distributors and who said, well, we can't distribute this because it's porn. And then she would go to porn distributors who would say, we can't distribute this. This isn't porn. And she was caught between two stools, and it was very frustrating for her. Fortunately, she did get distributed eventually through Adam and Eve, the sex toy company, who made a tremendous, who allowed her to basically continue her business. But I had tremendous respect for Candace, and I miss her too.
Yes, she was beautiful and bright and a visionary. And she was such a good friend. I still miss her. She, you know, she, I won't allow myself to, but I could almost cry just thinking about that she didn't get to live long enough. Ovarian cancer. And part of the documentary about her is that her mother, who abandoned her father, Candace eventually found out that her mother had had ovarian cancer, but she didn't find that out till she already had it.
Yeah,
and there is a genetic component, and what a shame! What a shame! Anyway, we need to talk more about your book, but we're sure on the same page about Candida Royale and her films, which were so. You know, using real couples. She used real couples whenever she could, and that was pretty much always. She liked to show real bodies instead of enhanced breasts, and so it was really. Back in the late 80s and 90s, I'd recommend her films for some of my couples because they were instructive. And anyway, so going back to your website, you've got the cure for PE. You've got a wonderful section on erectile dysfunction. You've got another wonderful section on great sex without intercourse. A chapter in your book that I really, really appreciate is the chapter about no one is ever too old for great sex. And then I want to go back to your never too old for great sex. You've also got a section on oral sex for men and for women. And you have some really good information and specific how-tos. Because let's face it, there are a lot of men who think they might like cunnilingus, but they're not quite sure what to do. And you've got all the specifics there. It's great, Michael. It's just great.
There is cunnilingus in porn, and women and men, many men learn how to perform oral sex on women by watching porn. The problem is that in porn, the guys lap at the women like parched dogs given a bowl of water, and a lot of women, it's too intense. Men have to slow down and not press as hard and invite the women in their lives and beds to coach them how they like it. A lot of women's clitorises are so sensitive to touch that any touch of the clitoris is uncomfortable, and in those cases, men should lick around it. And there's nothing wrong with women who have super sensitive clitorises. That's fairly common. Yes, in my chapter on oral sex, there are all kinds of little tips about, little technique tips for how to try it. But the most important thing is to ask the woman in your life to coach you and to say, just say yes. When you're doing it right, she should say yes. When she's a little uncomfortable, she should just be silent, and then pretty quick the guy starts doing what gets the yes. So that's one way to coach without saying, hey moron, do it this way.
I like your approach, Michael. Yes,
if a woman just says yes or remains silent, very quickly the guy learns what she likes.
Mm-hmm. Very quickly. So in your chapter on No One Is Ever Too Old for Great Sex, you gave some information that I did not know about, and I've been doing this work for close to 38 years, and of course that's one reason I find sex so endlessly fascinating. I'm occasionally learning new things, and this is it in your book. Before PSA testing, don't ejaculate for 4 days.
Right.
And right. A few doctors tell men that orgasm ejaculation raises the PSA. I did not know that.
My urologist never told me.
So how did you find out?
I found out reading the research, and I was quite surprised. It turns out that, you know, when men ejaculate, it raises their PSA. Well, plenty of men out there in television land ejaculate daily or every other day or several times a week, which means that they're raising their PSA. Then they go have a PSA test, and it shows high, and the urologist neglects to ask them, when was the last time you had sex? And he just says, oh, you're high, we've got to do a biopsy. Well, prostate biopsies are extremely unpleasant, and they're costly, and they're time-consuming, and they can leave men with a sore butt. And for a lot of these guys, a lot of these biopsies could be completely avoided if they just understood that ejaculation raises PSA, and when you've got a PSA test scheduled, do not ejaculate for 4 days. And it's going to lower your PSA substantially and probably avoid a whole lot of unnecessary biopsies and unnecessary prostate surgery that can leave you with erection difficulties. So, to me, it's unconscionable that the urologists of America do not routinely say, I want you to have a PSA, and then immediately add the corollary and don't ejaculate for 4 days beforehand. But they don't. My guy never told me, it's very frustrating.
It's very frustrating, and my experience, because I always ask my new client who's presenting with a particular problem that could have some physiological background, have you been to a urologist for the men? Have you been to a gynecologist? Or in my case, I have worked with a naturopath specializing in sexual medicine, or a naturopath to rule out physiological problems. And if they say yes, they often have also added that they don't get any sexual information from these doctors who are specialists in their field, but they don't talk very much about sexuality. And that's been going on for quite a few years. I think it's getting slightly better now. What's your experience? Your wife is a medical doctor, isn't she?
Right. Yeah, my wife's a doctor. And the thing about doctors is that medical school teaches doctors to solve puzzles. People bring in symptoms. The doctor solves the puzzle, makes the diagnosis, orders the treatment. But there's lip service given to counseling of people in medical settings, but doctors don't engage in much counseling. They don't have the time. I mean, my wife was expected to see four or five patients an hour when she was working. And, you know, it takes a minute or two to say hello. It takes a minute or two to say goodbye. And so you have basically 10 productive minutes per patient. Well, it just doesn't allow a whole lot of time for counseling, even if a doctor is inclined to provide counseling, and many are not because they're not trained to. So
exactly.
That's why going to your doctor for sex advice is usually not a good idea. I mean, it's certainly a good idea to go to a doctor, if you're having a sex problem, to visit a doctor to rule out organic causes. You know, have a checkup and make sure everything's okay. And then if you still have a sex problem, then you get some kind of counseling. Either you read a book or you go to a sex coach or you go to a sex therapist. Most sex problems are not that difficult to resolve. absent, real physiological problems or real mental health problems. For the average, couple next door, they can probably resolve their sex problems if they get a little bit of counseling and a little bit of information.
I really appreciate, Michael, you've done this for years. You absolutely advise people to see a sex therapist. Go through the other steps first and then see a sex therapist. You've always been very positive about that, and I appreciate that. And that's throughout this upcoming book of yours and in past books, too.
There are ones who can provide in-depth individual counseling. The main problem I see with sex therapists is there aren't enough of them. I mean, there's 320 million Americans. There's only about 2,000 or 3,000 sex therapists in the whole country.
Yeah.
So there's no way that sex therapists can really deal with all the problems. And, of course, there are a lot of people for whom sex therapy is just a little too expensive, which is why there are self-help resources out there, like, my book, my website.
Absolutely.
And, of course, a tremendous amount of information on the Internet. The problem with that is that a lot of the information on the Internet is wrong, and it's hard to tell the difference between what's righteous and what's, silly and incorrect and harmful. So it also frustrates me that sometimes the good information gets drowned out by all the bad stuff.
Well, that's right. And you have very good information. I encourage our listeners. And don't forget, you can call in. You're anonymous. 888-874-4888 if you're listening to this live. Ask Michael Castleman. He's answered thousands and thousands of questions over the years. So we have a real popular sex expert here. And you've learned enough over the years that you could easily be a sex therapist yourself. And I know you do some counseling as well. You should, because you know more than a lot of sex therapists, I think. At least, not me, but some sex therapists. You know a lot.
Well, thank you. I'm not a sex therapist, and I was never inclined to go through the extensive mental health training that one does. I've always been a journalist, and as a result, I've developed a facility for reading the sex journals. There are half a dozen sexological journals, and there's sex information in many, many other journals. And the problem with that is that the journals are obscure. I mean, they're not available to most people, and even a lot of sex therapists, they're busy, dealing with real people and clients, and they don't keep up with the research as much as I do, for example, because that's all I do. I work day in, day out, trying to synthesize, read sex journals and synthesize the information and make it available to people so that it doesn't remain in the rarefied realm of the journal world, that it actually gets to the public. And that's why I do my blog on Psychology Today, to bring obscure sex information and make it less obscure, make it more available to more people.
You do the work. You back your book up with a mountain of research, more than 2,500 studies. I don't have time to read these, and I get the journals, and I don't have time. So I really appreciate that you read them, that you sort them out, that you're objective, that you're articulate, all of those things. You provide a real service. A real service, and that's why I look forward to your great sex guidance, A Comprehensive Guide to Lifelong Pleasure. It'll come out in about a year, but I've had the advanced reader copy.
Right. Well, thank you for your kind words.
And I'm so grateful for it.
But the support.
Your last book, 2004, Great Sex, I have in my library, as do I have Sexual Solutions from 1980 in my library, but the Great Sex one, I've referred to many, many of my clients. It's a beautiful book, beautifully written, so informative, and now this one is going to be a real comprehensive guide to lifelong pleasure. I mean, talk about the lifelong pleasure part of it in terms of your readers and the audience and the lifelong part.
Well, there's never really been a book that talked about sexual issues from birth to death. Sexual mm-hmm. issues tend to be sort of demographically ghettoized. There's books about, welcome to puberty for teenagers. There's books about sex problems for midlife adults. There's books about sex and aging for older people. But the fact is that a lot of stuff that you do in your youth has implications for your sexuality later in life. And messages that you get as a child can either help or hinder your sex life later. And that is why, for this book, which is sort of my, legacy work, I guess.
Of course
I wanted to consider sexual issues throughout the lifespan, from the sexual implications of circumcision to the new frontier of sex in nursing homes. Because what happens in your youth can have a real impact on what happens on how happy you are sexually as a young person, as a prime of life adult, and in later life too. So it's important to consider the whole person throughout the whole person's life, because sex is a lifelong pleasure.
Yes. And Masters and Johnson discovered that in their research too, didn't they? That what happens in your sexual life in your 20s and 30s can definitely affect your senior sexuality.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, every sex researcher knows this, but the public often does not. And that's why...
That's right. The public does not.
I wanted to elucidate all of the ways that things that happen when you're young can impact when you're old. For example, a lot of people start smoking when they're young, and mm-hmm. it doesn't affect their sex life, because they are, robust, vital young people. But if you smoke for 15 or 20 years, men can kiss their erections goodbye by around
mm-hmm.
age 40.
Mm-hmm.
And women will be less sexually responsive, too. The same thing about exercise. I mean, if you want to have good sex life, it's important to get regular exercise throughout your life. And if you haven't been an exerciser, no matter where you are in your life right now, start exercising, you are going to probably experience sexual enhancement. And you don't have to work up a sweat. You don't have to join a gym. You don't have to sweat buckets. All you have to do is take a walk for about a half hour a day. If you're not
That's right.
an exerciser and you walk for about a half hour a day, it's going to help your sex life. It's also going to help your blood pressure. It's going to help your sleep. It's going to help your mood. It's going to help everything. And when you feel good about yourself, well, you feel more sexual and you radiate more attractiveness. And so other people are probably going to think you're hotter too.
And, you can look younger. Lots of people think they can't believe my age, which I'm not going to say on the air, although sometimes I guess I've said it. But I'm well into my 70s, and lots of people think I look younger. Well, that's because I have remained sexual as a woman my whole life, and my husband and I have amazing sex. And he's healthy, and I'm healthy, and we have a good attitude about it, and isn't that pretty much the foundation? And we want pleasure. We desire pleasure. We know how healing and healthy it is to have sexual pleasure.
Yeah, well, that's the issue. Sex is pleasurable, and people who are sex negative are suspicious of pleasure. The Puritan element in American society, which is, quite strong and deep, You know, there's that old joke about why was the Puritan upset? Because somewhere, someone was having fun. Sex is fun. Sex is fun, and Puritans can't stand the idea that people actually are enjoying themselves.
Yes. Oh, you know, we need to have more fun, more playfulness, and sex should be also really playful, and sex toys or adult toys. I love this quote, and this is attributed to Oliver Wendell Holmes. He said, on seeing a beautiful woman, a 90-something Oliver Wendell Holmes is said to have commented, oh, to be 70 again.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, it's, if use it or lose it, it applies here too, of course. And some women are surprised to know that even for intercourse, it's a use it or lose it thing for their vaginas and the walls of their vaginas, and remaining flexible and not getting too thin. And so I suggest to women without partners who are postmenopausal to masturbate with a dildo and get aroused, reading erotica, whatever, put that dildo in your vagina, contract on it, because it's healthy for the vagina. A lot of OBGYNs will tell you that many postmenopausal women come in and they can't get into the vagina because it's kind of closed up. I mean, not literally, but it's painful. Nothing's been in there.
Right. Yes, you're absolutely right.
Of course, erections are good for erections. Blood flow, nitric oxide, all of those things, right? We got to use it or lose it.
But the, what you say, of course, is true. And in addition, I would say that so many middle-aged men who start to have erection difficulties, they think, oh, my God, you know, I'm at the end of my sexual rope. It's all over. I can't function anymore. I'm going to retire from sex. I'm not going to have any more sex. You know, you're free to stop having sex if you want, but no one is ever too old to have sex, and there's plenty of really orgasmic, wonderful ways to enjoy sex without having an erection.
Yes,
you know,
let's talk about
hugging,
that.
Kissing, hand jobs, oral sex, toys, kink, whatever. You know, couples who are older, and most couples who are older and remain sexual, I mean, some of the men use erection medications to continue to have intercourse, but a lot of couples say, you know what, he's having trouble with erection, she's having, you know, vaginal dryness or atrophy, let's just not have intercourse anymore, let's just play in all kinds of different ways, and you can have wonderful sex without intercourse.
Absolutely. So we often call it outer course, but it works. And couples, I've had many in my practice who start really enjoying it. And the sensate focus exercises that Masters and Johnson, I love what you said about Virginia Johnson in your book, that she was a lusty lady, and she had no particular credentials, but she was intuitive about what people might, what lovers might like from each other. And, I identify with, and we spoke off the air yesterday about the wonderful video series that Masters of Sex, about Masters and Johnson, from the book, which I loved, Masters of Sex by Thomas Meyer. But Virginia Johnson came up with the sensate focus because, at least as it was portrayed, I believe in the book, but at least for sure in the television series, Bill Masters was having some erectile dysfunction, and she came up with full body touching so he could relax. And that's what a lot of men need. take intercourse off the table and let's just relax and have pleasure.
You know, a lot of people, a lot of Americans think that sex is intercourse. Actually, what sex is mutual massage that eventually focuses on the genitals. It's really much more about whole body massage than it is about just humping. And when people expand their view of sex and realize that there's more to it than just sticking it in somewhere, everybody's happier. Massage itself is very deeply relaxing. And when you deeply relax with massage, sex feels a lot better. It feels more exciting and more fulfilling and more satisfying.
Mm-hmm. You said in your last book, Great Sex, was that 2004, that men should exchange porn for some massage oil. I thought that was very good. I've quoted you on that. Massage oil. And I recommend massage all the time because if you massage each other before sex, you're much more likely to be relaxed and have an enjoyable experience.
Right, right. I think one of the issues is, again, that a lot of couples feel like, well, I'm not a massage therapist. I don't know how to give a massage. You don't have to give a formal massage. You just have to touch each other gently all over, every square inch of skin, from the scalp to the feet. If you just touch it gently with massage lotion if you want, or if not, if you don't want, just touch each other gently for about 20 minutes before you reach between anybody's legs. And if you, and there's no need to have a clock, but if you make love to music, you know, it's like four or five standard songs. You touch each other and then move on to genital exploration. You don't have to give a formal massage, although that's nice if you know how to do that or you go get massages. But just touching each other gently from head to toe, that's what that's the basis of enjoyable sex.
You know, when you think about it, we have all of these potential erogenous zones from the top of our head to the very bottoms of our feet, and I really believe it's too bad when the majority of people get stuck between the legs. We have all these, you know, we have the smorgasbord of erogenous zones. Tasty stuff.
Yes, and in particular, I have found with, I've often, you know, I do a little counseling, although I'm not an official counselor, and I often encourage couples to give each other foot massages. And foot massages are unbelievably relaxing and very sex-enhancing, and people don't connect. Usually, they don't connect their feet to what's between their legs. But if couples would massage each other's feet for like 5 minutes, I guarantee you'll have more fun with when you lay down together.
Yes, and well, of course, reflexology, the Chinese approach to foot massage, is that probably goes back quite a few thousand years. So we have all these nerve endings in our feet, too. I suggest this a lot, and some men, more than men than women, will say, oh, I'm too ticklish with my feet. And I'll often say, you know, if you do some touching before the feet so that you're a little more aroused, you're probably going to be less likely to be ticklish when you have a foot massage.
Right.
Or allow that first moment of ticklishness to pass and really get into how good it feels to have your arch deeply stroked, for instance, or your toes sucked on or whatever. That's going a little bit beyond the massage.
Using the flat of the palm of the hand on the bottom of the feet is often a way to avoid ticklishness. People, if you touch someone, the bottom of someone's feet with very feathery strokes with your fingers, that can tickle. But if you press the palm of your hand into the arch of someone's foot, that's less likely to feel ticklish and is a a door, a window into enjoyable foot massage. And I encourage people just to experiment and see what works for them. I keep saying, try foot massage any way you can do it. Usually people get back to me and say, hey, that was really good.
Mm-hmm. I like your suggestion, the open palm and rubbing that into the arch. That's good. That's good, because the feathery touch can feel a little more ticklish. Yeah. So in your chapter, I don't know, because we're coming toward the end of the program, but you have another chapter. There's so many chapters, and oh dear, Michael Castleman, I really hope I can entice you back on this program in 2020, because oh, there's so much in your book, and you have desire differences, which is the number one problem that most sex therapists say is a presenting problem, including me. And in your book, you have a very good explanation about why does the hot and heavy period end? Why does it end? And you have some very good reasons for it, but a lot of people don't understand it very well. Would you talk a little bit about that?
When people fall in love, they can't keep their hands off each other, and if they are very sexual people, they think, oh my God, I finally found somebody who is as sexual as I am, and we are going to have sex constantly for the rest of our lives. That almost never happens. After a while, after 6 months to 2 years, the feeling of sexual urgency almost always declines, and it's a result of dopamine in the brain, the neurotransmitter. Dopamine is the neurotransmitter of pleasure. It's also the neurotransmitter of novelty. When you do anything new, you get more dopamine. So a lot of people understand that sex is usually more fun in hotels than at home.
That's right.
Why? Because hotels are new and different. There's something different. As people get to know each other, as couples get to know each other, generally, sex becomes kind of routine. And routine is the enemy of dopamine. When things become routine, you don't get a lot of dopamine released in the brain, and so you don't get really erotically aroused as much. There's also the idea that when you fall in love after meeting somebody, you're really fantasizing about a stranger. But over time, that stranger becomes someone who you get to know really well, and they're not perfect. They have problems. They have issues. They can be irritating. They can be annoying. And that is a sexual turnoff. So a lot of the transition to between the transition from falling in love to developing a deeply attached relationship. And in that process, you have to look for new ways to have fun together all the time out of bed, because if you have fun out of bed, if you do new things out of bed, chances are you will bring fresh sexual energy into bed.
Absolutely. No question about it. The dopamine thing is, some people don't know about it, but the dopamine, the neurotransmitter, does need novelty. And you point out in your book, and I point out in my practice, that many, is to say a man who is the woman's withholding because she doesn't feel it anymore, he'll often have affairs so he can get that jolt of dopamine again, something novel. And that's often deleterious to the relationship.
Yeah. I encourage couples. I'm in a long marriage myself, and so, I've my wife and I have fallen into routines and sometimes don't, you know, go the extra mile to make things, you know, special and fun. But then we remind ourselves, hey, we've got to do some things together. We have to play. We have to play together. And if you play together out of bed, it helps when you play in bed. That's just what happens.
Somebody did a study once that showed that couples who had adventures together and played together and maybe raised their adrenaline with some adventures like white water rafting, then they felt more sexual desire.
That are activities, you're more physically fit, you get the oxygen boost of exercising, and if you're active out of bed, you'll be more active in bed.
Oh, I like that. So the music usually comes on a little bit before the top of the hour, so we may be winding up. You are just an amazing source of information. And so, again, to the listeners, go to his website, greatsexguidance.com. It's also under, it's the same one, I guess, michaelcastleman.com. And you'll learn a lot more from Michael Castleman. And I so appreciate you. I think a lot of people do. I hope you get that feedback. You must through the people you counsel.
Thank you, Diana. I really appreciate being on the show. I'm happy to come back and chat again. And thank you so much for having me on.
Well, you're welcome. And I wanted to quote you at the end of the show here, if I can find it in the manuscript that I have. And I think I will, just a second. I know it's page 16, before the music comes on. Yes. You say, sex is one of life's great pleasures. It can also drive people crazy. I hope this book reduces confusion and misery and enhances erotic pleasure and satisfaction for lovers of all ages. I wish you great sex. Oh, I love that. You know, that's what I'm wishing for my clients too. Wishing them great sex, because what a difference it makes. The sex positive, well, the music hasn't come on yet, so I maybe get this in. Sex positive, you had sex positive parents, according to your acknowledgments. I did too. What a difference that makes. But you can always become more sex positive with more reading, with more information, with more communication with a partner, maybe seeing a sex therapist, right? You can get all of that.
Yeah.
There's the music. Thank you again, Michael Castleman.
My pleasure. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome, and we'll talk again in 2020.
Yes.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye. Nel labirinto di un amaro autore.